night. It just stopped on me in the middle.
You got the batteries in it.
I got batteries in it.
You see it?
That's not bad. She's all lighting up.
I know. That's what I had last. Okay. So we're starting our seventh class in Nefesh HaChaim. So those that are here for the first time and find yourself a little bit in an awkward position, you only have six tapes to listen to. We are at the bottom of page Yud Ches, for those who have the text. And I notice in every class that I give this class in, every week there's less people with the text. I don't know what it is. I guess text is a little scary, huh? Well, as long as it's one person following, I feel that it's worthwhile to read it inside. Oh, now we got four. Yeah, okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So anyway, last time, just to give a two-minute overview of Chapter 6. Now, really, Chapter 6 doesn't come to its conclusion until we get into Chapter 7. So there's some ideas that are going to...
Confuse me.
No, but it hangs in the balance for a little while. But we discussed how Reb Chaim is trying to give to sharpen and qualify the statement of Reb Chaim Vital, who said at the end of chapter 5 that the soul of man is the deepest of all worlds in terms of spiritual entity, and how he discussed the idea of the soul of man down in this world, which is created from the breath of God, is also connected to its shorish neshama, its root soul, which is in the highest worlds of creation. And that alone we would have thought would have been enough to satisfy our needs to know how man has power to affect all the worlds, since his root soul comes from the highest of all the worlds, and the chain going down from world to world, the shalsheles, is hitting from the higher world to the lower world to the lower world, and it's impacted, so they would seem to have the greatest impact. However, he said, you can't understand it as being exactly as a soul-body relationship, because within the soul and the body, it's immediate, it's instantaneous. And he brings sources to show it's not quite instantaneous in terms of man as he interfaces with the spiritual worlds. So now he brought in, last week, a new concept, that when the Almighty created man, what did he do? He took a pinch of all the spiritual forces in all the worlds, right? The whole configurations and arrangements of the different spiritual worlds from the godly realm all the way down to the human realm, which he said fits into the configuration of a human being, so to speak. And he took a little bit of all that and created the mini universe called the human being. So a human being has elements of all the spiritual elements in the higher realms. So he got into that point. And you see, he's going to merge those two points. That in chapter 7, he's going to merge those points. So that's like that. Those two ideas are still like on hold. Like why we need both aspects, we're going to wait till chapter 7, which will be next week. And then we went into this long gloss, which went into the sin of first man. Spent a lot of time on that last week, and basically saying that man being a microcosm and a mini universe was only of the forces of good, and the forces of evil were a different realm that he had no relation to. And only subsequent to the sin did now he bring in these forces of negativity to be totally enmeshed with himself. And since he's a microcosm of all the world, all the worlds become enmeshed with this evil, and that created all kinds of problems, which we went to at length last week. So now we're in the middle of that. He's going to finish this part off in the gloss on the bottom of Yud Ches. So last paragraph. V'nimshach, and it comes, V'nimshach ha'inyan, and this status of existence continued, Cain, ad eis matan Torah, until the Torah was given. When the Torah was given and the Jewish people said, Nasa v'nishma, we will do and we will listen and put all their faith in the Almighty, Shas paska osa hazuma mitochem. This zuhama, this sort of contamination of the intermingling of good and evil, when man's lack of clarity and able to discern and to split them apart, that ceased. Kamo Shomer Hazal, as our rabbis say in Talmud Shabbos, that negativity ceased. And truly, at that point in time, the Jewish people, for that very brief period of time, nobody died. Okay, they went back to pre-Adam, and pre-sin, and nobody died. We know, as the Medrash says, before the Jews received the Torah, anyone who had any physical ailment was healed at the event of Sinai. All right? So they brought themselves back to the state of man pre-sin. Yeah?
Then how come they die when they heard the...
That's different. That's not dying. That's not physical dying. That's being overwhelmed by the spiritual experience.
Okay.
That was just like too heavy of a spiritual experience. It wasn't decaying of the body, death. But v'lachein acher kach b'cheta egel. Now afterwards, with the sin of the golden calf, it has to work with the same formula the way the sin of first man works. Amar Razal, our rabbi said, what prompted their error? What prompted their error? What happens? Just decide to bow down to the golden calf? What's it going to be? So the rabbis tell us, Shabbos Satan, Satan came along, the Yetzer came, the ear bave, and confounded them. It says that the Satan came. Again, the same idea. He gave him an image of Moshe having been dead at Sinai and said he's not coming back. And that was enough to bring a state of confusion to them. All right? And then, whatever, not getting into the whole spiel of what the sin of the golden calf was all about. But whatever it was for first man, you have to interpret that to be the sin of the Jewish people the same way. Anyway, Hainuba, what's the point? Shabbat mibachutz. Satan had to come from outside. Again, it was the same area. It was set down. This is true. This is false. They had gotten that clarity again. And he comes from the outside as an external force. Why? Because mitochem nizgaresh, because he was already thrown out before when the Jewish people accepted to take on the Torah. And they got the experience. But subsequent to the sin of the golden calf, chazer osazuma, this contamination returned, v'nis orva besochem, and now mingled inside them again, kibatchil, as it was in the beginning. And that was the second chance we blew it. V'zeshomar akosim, this is what the text, the prophet Hosea says, Behema, and those people, the Jewish people, Adam, just like first man of Rubris, transgressed the covenant. They made the same mistake. Okay, next page, your test. Now we're going to see something very interesting. So now he's going to explain where the concept of death comes into the picture now. Okay? Why is it that man must die because he ate from the forbidden fruit? Why does he got to die?
To finally go back to heaven, to be with God, the nefesh.
To be with God. Well, wasn't he with God before, in the garden?
Oh, I see what your question. Okay.
Before the original sin, the body of man was not as corporeal as it is.
Correct. Correct.
So
it's not some degree of corporeality, whatever the word is, but not the way we experience it now.
This new body,
it's more like a translucent body.
That's right, a spirit. So this new body dies and decays.
Why?
Because it's of a lower world.
Okay, but why does this have to happen? In other words, I want to know the mechanics and the rationale. Is God punishing man? Is God punishing man?
Yeah.
Yes. No. Let's go back to let somebody else finish the mission, but the next guy's going to die too. So what's wrong with the soul he's got? And what's the transmigrated soul going to be any better? Okay, so it's a good question.
That's been an allotment of time.
See, someone's Jonathan's trying to go back to some old Parsha classes.
It's re-education, the matter. Okay, you've got a mass educated man now. The severance of the relationship between spirit and body has got to be sorted out.
You have to have limited time. Otherwise,
so you've got to die. You've got to die to experience that.
Well, maybe because you've now got this admixture of good and evil in your illusionary view of reality. You're going to start creating more problems for yourself if you go on and on for too long. You've got to sort of, that is an impetus to sort of recognize the significance of existence. the idea.
And if he wouldn't die, and if he wouldn't die,
maybe he wouldn't have this.
Okay, you're on the right tracks. Okay, that's just about it. So let's see what he says. He just about got it there. That's what the Almighty tells first man. He warns him, the day you will eat from this, most tamus, you will bring in a concept of mortality into the world. Not that it's a curse or a punishment. He's quoting a verse in Echa now, Ecclesiastes, because from the mouth of the Almighty does not come out, etc. The etc. is haros vatov, evil or good. From God's mouth does not come out evil or good. What does it mean to say? Although everything emanates from God, but it's the choice of man's actions, which are good or bad, that's what determines what's going to happen. It's not the divine choice if good or bad things should happen, but rather it's the human being. You know, man makes the mistakes in ascribing to God his evil ways as if it's divinely forced upon him. That's totally not so. Rather, the person has to conquer his own evil inclination and has free choice. And therefore, God, it's the result. It's the natural consequence of what happens. But God is not the issuer, the beginning of the evil or the good. Man decides what's going to happen, and then the natural consequence flows. And here comes a natural consequence. Ela perusho, but the explanation is, shal yedei achocha mimenu, once you will eat from it, what's going to happen to you? Tisarev b'chazu mashalara, will now become mixed inside of you, this total lack of clarity, as we explained last week, that the Yetzirah brings in the second level of imagination, and it's going to be mixed in so much, this contamination of evil. And there's no way you're going to extricate yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is to bring tikkun to the world, to bring perfection. Man, you can't get yourself, you got yourself into such a maze of confusion, you're never going to get yourself out of it. There's no way to separate you from the thicket of this mixture of evil and good. In order, kidei lehetivcha b'achrischa, in order to give you the ultimate good at the end, im lo yirei hamisa v'ikol b'kever, unless it comes with death and the disintegration of the body in the grave. And Lutzaro talks a lot about this, but what he's basically saying is, you got to lose this physicality now. It's too much of a source of evil. You've brought in too much. Too physical now. You brought in too much physicality into your life. You can't extricate yourself from it. And the idea being, when a person dies, the soul is released. There's a lot. Lutzaro talks tons about this. He says, as a result of the sin, the soul isn't able to do what the soul could do. And therefore, when the person dies, the soul is released. Soul is able to grow further. The body decomposes. You get when the resurrection comes, you get a newer and better model that doesn't have all these problems that the first model had. And then we'll bring back the body and soul together, and we won't have these problems anymore. That's the idea in terms of resurrection. It's the idea in terms of the soul itself. Soul itself is able to grow to greater extremes when it's extricated from the body. Okay, so that's the point. Once you've done such a horrendous mistake, you can't get yourself out of it. So I could let you live forever, but you're never going to find yourself. This is not going to work. So it's kind of a favor that God is doing for him. Okay, what? You don't understand the answer?
Well, we're just wondering if your body dies, so then your soul can come back, let's say, you know, in stage two, and see if you can't fix this.
We're not talking about transmigration. Now I'm talking about Mashiach. Think about Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, we'll see what will happen to evil, and you'll have the purified body. You start over. It doesn't have all those limitations that the first body had. Okay, and the soul is a stronger soul. The body's a stronger body. We'll try it again fresh. Okay? I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I mean, there's a lot. I mean... You know, I don't want to do a whole Derech Hashem class now, because we're going to save for next year. But the whole idea is, we'll hit it from another. This is what he's saying. There's other stuff behind this, obviously. The truth is, why should a body not die before man sinned? Very simple. The Almighty created a person out of two units, body and soul. They were meant to harmoniously work together, in perfect harmony. When a body and soul work in perfect harmony, what happens? The body takes on properties of soul. The soul is supposed to merge and meld with, not the kind of body we have, though. Not that kind of body. The kind of body Adam had was a little bit more, as you said, what was less what?
Etheric.
Okay. I got to remember that word. That's a good word. It's more etheric. Okay. So it was able to meld, so to speak, harmoniously with the body, and as Luzzatto says, feed in spiritual energies into the body. And the idea being not that when, you know, you're doing something spiritual, your body's twiddling its thumb and is waiting for its fun in the sun. Okay, but the idea is that the soul is nurturing the body, is nurturing it, and it is taking on properties of soul. That was the intent for original man. Okay, and therefore, the soul is eternal, so the body that's nurtured by it is eternal. When man chose to eat from the forbidden fruit, what he did was he chose to not listen to God more than anything else, is to choose to go after your body and not after your soul. In other words, you can identify your body as something else other than a connection with the soul. When man makes that mistake and he identifies with the body over the soul, man causes a schism between the body and soul and causes a distancing between the two, and the soul is no longer able to feed into the body the way it used to. Once that happens, then the body no longer takes on properties of soul, and then arteries clog up. The aging process kicks into place, and it becomes a natural consequence of that. Okay, that's the way Luzzatto explains it. This is not the way Luzzatto maybe explains the mechanics of where death comes from. Reb Chaim over here is explaining the logic of why it only will help man to die. Okay, because otherwise he's just not going to be able to pull it all together. The corruption that the Yetzirah brings into man is so strong, a human being, the way he is now, is not going to be able to sort things out and ultimately bring himself to a tikkun. It's just not possible.
But with that logic, the conclusion of that would be that we should also commit suicide.
Why is that?
Because the ultimate state is freedom from the body.
Yeah, but the problem is the Torah says you don't. The Torah says you don't. The Torah says, I want you to live in this world, and you got to try the best you can, and I'm the one who'll decide when you leave. And there are things, as Reb Chaim is saying, you can accomplish. There's lots of things that you can accomplish. Ultimate perfection, you're right, and that's why ultimately you'll die. But along the road, there's lots to accomplish. There are many things you're going to accomplish. And, you know, you get nothing. If you kill yourself when you start off, where's your reward going to come from? What have you done to deserve anything?
What do you give the soul the opportunity to grow?
What's it going to grow from? That's what he's going to talk about in a few chapters. Where's the potential to grow from? It hasn't created anything to bask in. We will see. So I know where your question's coming from, Peter, and many people would ask the same question. It's coming from the assumption that there's this place called Gan Eden, heaven, and all you have to do is get a good immigration lawyer and get yourself a ticket in. And once I get in, I'm okay. And Reb Chaim is going to tell us a few chapters it doesn't work that way. The Gan Eden you have is the Gan Eden you create in this world.
It's basically what you do when you're living, and sort of the statute of limitations ends upon death.
That's right. So therefore, if you commit suicide, you have no world to come. You have no world to come at all. Okay? So that's why that's not an option. It's not an option. Adam may have felt that way. Okay, but God tells us not an option. Yeah?
Now, I remember we were talking about that one of the punishments that God gives us, that we die. Now,
again, it's not a punishment. I say that's not a punishment.
No, but isn't it if somebody is bad and so on, and we pray in Yom Kippur that God will give us life?
That's a different life. That's spiritual life. That's a life of meaning. It's a different, altogether different stuff we're praying for over there. And it's not just for life, it's for more opportunities to be able to do things in this world.
No, but one of the things is, like, that's what I saw, that God sometimes punishes, that takes the life from somebody. You mean that that's just the spiritual
that's
life?
For a specific, that's for specific things. Here we're talking about, for this one general sin, does mortality come into the world or not? Okay, now once mortality is in the world, now God will say, okay, there'll be times we're going to plug it in, times we don't plug it in, but we have to first incorporate it into the world. That initial incorporation of mortality into the world, was it a punishment or not? And the truth is, it's not a punishment. And even then, even death itself isn't really, so to speak, so much a punishment as more of a tikkun. Yeah?
Am I correct in understanding that when death occurs, then the soul separates from the body, and the soul then at that moment receives the clarity it didn't have before, and it also separates itself from evil at that point too?
Yeah, it separates itself from the constraints of the body.
So,
and the subsequent evil that the body has brought into it, and the garbage that the human being has piled upon that soul.
But does the soul maintain the clarity of both existences, the negativity and the positivity, after death, or does it...
No, it's released. It's released from all that. It gets the clarity. It gets the clarity. How much clarity it gets is based on how much Olam Haba man created for himself. Okay, let's not get onto the Olam Haba world now. We're not going to get anywhere, and this is not the purpose of the book. Yeah. It was, but it was an external Yetzirah. It was not him. It was like, as we say, the nudging spouse. Okay. Why?
Because you learn Shalom Bayit, you never want to think of your spouse as nudging at all, ever.
Yeah, but if the, but this one was. This was the situation. This was the nudging spouse situation. That's all I'm saying. It was an external force. And he saw it. This is not me. This is external. What did Adam do? He went and brought it in. He willingly brought it in. Then it became an internal force. And he saw. He says, you're bad. You're evil. But we explained last week why he felt justified in bringing evil into himself. That was last week's tape. You got to hear it. So anyway, let's go to the next paragraph. So what happens? So next paragraph. Now we understand, Masha Omar Hu Yisborach Achakach. Now we know what God says. After Adam sins, what does God say? Hey, Adam Hayavachulo. Behold, man now is one of us. And he knows that there is good and evil. Beatoya now. Pen Yishvach Yoro, lest he stretch forth his hand. Velachachachami Eitzachayim, and he'll eat from the tree of life. Beachal Vachayli Olam, and he'll eat and live forever. This we cannot allow. Right? So the question, if you're just reading the text, he says, doesn't God want to do good for mankind? What does it bother if he lives forever? That would be the question you would have had when you read the text. It's interesting though, you see from that he would not have lived forever had he not eaten from it. And that's you got to work that out. But it appears man would not live forever had he not eaten from it. He'd have to make the choice to live forever. It was one choice you'd have to make. I mean, it's, I don't know, you got to work that through exactly. But anyway, so now what's the answer? The answer's obvious. Amnam Ratzalayim, what did God mean? Shekasher Yochel Me'etz HaChaim, if he will eat from the Eitz HaChaim, V'chayli Olam, and will live forever, what's going to happen? He's never going to die. Yisharach Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, he'll always remain below Tikkun without any amendment, without any correction. Why? Because the evil will have no way of ever extricating and being expelled from him eternally. He'll never really see the true light and the true goodness of spirituality, the untainted spirituality, ever. The Zos, therefore, litovaso, for man's good, gershom migan Eden. He chased him out of the Garden of Eden, in order that he could one day come to the total amendment. When? Menu, when the evil separates from him, al yedei hamisa v'ha'iku v'kever, through the death and the disintegration of the body in the grave. That's what would have to happen. It's interesting, if you look on the bottom, he, in 51, he brings from the Vilna Gaon, which the Vilna Gaon was the Rebbe of Reb Chaim of Volozhin, he brings down the idea when God tells him what's going to happen to him, he's going to die, he says, you will go back to the earth. You're going to go back to the earth, you're going to die. So the Vilna Gaon says, Ze eino klala, this is not a curse. Ela b'chiyuv, this is a requirement. This is something that's man, that must happen. Ki ofer atah, because you are earth. Earthliness, mundaneness, that kind of stuff. Bein b'cha hizgabrus hasichli, shirachomer zach v'nachi. You don't have enough intelligence now, strong enough intelligence, to purify the physicality that's there. There's too much lack of clarity here. So now here's a very interesting thing. Velach, and some of you should have been jumping already and said, wait a minute, Rabbi, you're making a mistake. Isn't there anybody who didn't die that you know of?
Yeah.
Elijah, chariot of fire comes down, he steps in, he steps into it and is whisked away. He didn't die. Chanoch, the father of Misushelach, same thing. He didn't die.
It says God took him
away. He took him away. He didn't die. He says, come on. Come on with your body and everything. Let's go. So what's going on? So that's what he says in the top of the left side. V'lachin chanoch v'eliyahu, therefore chanoch v'eliyahu, shlonim shechu achar achomer klal, those are the two individuals that were able to totally disassociate themselves from the evil. In other words, God statistically said, and you figure two out of how many billion people have lived on this earth. I mean, we could take a guess. I have no idea how many billions of people and what the fraction is. Two over, what, 100 billion? I don't know what the number is, how many people. God says statistically it's a bad idea if I let people live. No one's going to find except for two people. So, but the fact that there were two people who were able to make the split, or rather yet, forge the harmony between body and soul. And they're able to get total clarity. So therefore, lo chazru lafer, they don't go back to the ground. So that's the proof. If what God said was a curse to man, then lo nim latuel, they wouldn't have escaped the curse. If God would have given a curse, that would have meant, it's a punishment. It's an external punishment. You didn't listen to me, bam, I'm going to give it to you. I will cause death to all of humanity. But that's what God did. God said, you know what, I love you. And because you've made such a terrible mistake, you've done such a mistake that you can't get out of this. You can't get out of it. I'm going to do you a favor. We're going to create a mechanism because of that, Allah Lutzado, that you will die. And therefore, the ultimately is going to happen, you'll come and see that clarity and the ultimate pleasure when you die. But if anybody can beat the system, right, beat the Kobayashi Maru, as Kirk was able to do, right, that's the Kobayashi Maru, right? That's the no-win scenario. You got to die, right? Giving you little hints for the Christmas class, right? So that you're able to beat the no-win scenario. They were able to totally harmonize body and soul. If you do, why does God got to kill you? There's no point. They've already reached it all. They've already shown no point to die. Why he couldn't keep them in this world, it could have been too much of an enigma for people to live with those kinds of people. So God said, you've accomplished, you're not going to die, I'm just going to take you up as you are. And that's it. And you'll have an existence without having to come on to the body decomposing and all these things. You won't have to do that. So the fact that there were two such individuals is a proof that it wasn't a curse. That's the whole point. It was just a natural consequence, and if you could avoid the natural consequence. So if you want to live forever, try to be like Elyon Chanoch, and you can beat the system too. Okay?
Wouldn't have man been constrained by the physicality at some level? He was ethereal when he had some kind of...
They were able... Kind of so the truth is, man could handle it.
He could transcend it if you want.
He could transcend it. He could transcend it. Wouldn't have to die. They transcended it.
Even with some component, physical part of himself.
They were able to break that. They were able to break that. Or at least to the extent, even if, let's say, they couldn't, but God felt they've done what is the ultimate that a person can do. There's no reason that they should have to die. I mean, you see, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to live 40 days without eating. So what does that mean?
So this idea of what lives, the soul, the combination of the soul and the body, what's living, the soul.
Right, right. But you see, you're able to transcend those shackles. They're able to do it.
That would mean that we then do not lose that etheric body, but we have the...
Well, you'd have to do a lot to kind of get it back.
But it's here.
Well, not really. The body definitely changed, but they were able with that body to cause some kind of transformation through a tremendous surge of spirituality. Was able to affect the body, to cause some kind of metamorphosis within the body. I mean, even all prophets, you know, prophets temporarily, like the rabbis would say, their faces would shine. Their faces would shine. Again, if Moshe went 40 days without eating, there had to be something happening to him. There was some kind of change that the soul does to the body. But you got to be quite a holy person to do that.
What does the value of a shining face mean? You can have a soul that's unshackled to begin with. In other words,
well, the prophets, it was in and out. It wasn't a permanent state. It was a temporary state for a prophet.
But is it added value to have this kind of body fusion taking place, transcending, as opposed to just having a soul that gets released at the end of when it's game over?
It doesn't matter, but that was a reality they were able to accomplish. They were able to accomplish it.
So it's saying, but you accomplish it too when you die naturally anyways. You go back to the soul.
But isn't it much greater if you're able to do it yourself? Self-made man? Self-made soul? It's a lot better. It's a lot better. You got a lot more, you know, satisfaction and accomplishment. It's right in the prophets. It says, no, I'm reading you what the Vilna Gaon says, but he's telling us about Elijah. Go open up the book of Kings, the book, you'll find it there. Go look in Genesis chapter 4, chapter 3. It tells you God took Hanoch. God took him. Didn't say he died. By everyone it says he died. This, it doesn't say he died. It says God took him. What do you mean God took him? He didn't die. It says it right in the text. You know, if you believe what it says in Torah, then we're okay. You know, the class is making one assumption. This class assumes you believe what it says in the Torah and what it says in the Talmud. And then we're, and what it says in the Zohar. Not that I can suggest I can explain everything, but we have to at least go with that principle. Yeah?
Hashem says, look, man has become like us. I've never understood that phrase.
Okay, so that's what Rashi talks about it. There's different kinds of things, and well, the simple explanation is he's become the in other words, till now man was at the bottom of the spiritual totem pole. In other words, in the godlike realm, he was at the bottom of the godlike realm. Now man's totally gone out of that realm. Now he's on the top of the corporeal realm. So now man is the top banana in his world, just like I'm the top banana in my world. That's the explanation Rashi gives right on the spot. Right on the spot. We could suggest others based on this whole idea with Reb Chaim is that had Adam let's just leave it at that. It gets too complicated. But that's one simple answer. It keeps it simple.
Okay. I have.
We're not going to get anywhere tonight, people.
I have a problem with this Etzer Chaim. Why would God worry about Adam eating from Etzer Chaim? If God wants Adam to die, he will certainly die.
But he's not going to want to change the rules that he set. In other words, God won't make miracles if he doesn't have to. God said, there's this tree that will give you eternal life. So he's not going to make it. He's going to eat the eternal tree and it doesn't work. Right, God never wants to change things more than the way they naturally should be. All I got to do is send him out of the garden; he'll die. That's okay. But once he's going to eat from the tree of life, and I got to change the statutes of the tree of life, doesn't want to do that. Doesn't want to work that way. Okay, a little further. Vizel inyan, and this explains the concept. Hadalet shemesu be'etyo shel nachash. The Talmud has a discussion. Do people die because they sin, without sin, whatever? It's a whole discussion there. But in there, the Talmud says there are four people who died only because of the etio, which is Aramaic for the be'etzio, the advice, because of the advice of the snake, meaning to say because of man's first sin. That's what it means, because the advice of the snake, meaning man's first sin came as because of the advice of the snake. Meaning to say, and who are those four people? Binyamin, the son of Yaakov. Amram, the father of Moshe, it's not in the text, I'm telling you, Yishai, the father of David, and Kilo'ev, the son of David. There are four people who died only because of the reality of the snakes, of man's first sin. Sha'af shalohoyelham chet atzmom klol, although they didn't have any sins per se that they did, four people who did not sin, im kolzeh, still in al hutzruchu l'mi, so they had to die. Machmas hatarovas harishin shalara, because of the initial mixture of evil that came in, al yidei chet arav harishin me'atzas hanochash, that came through the sin of the first man through the advice of the snake. So now you're going to wonder and ask, well, how are they different than Chanach and Elio? Right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to say, the Chanach and Elio, like, totally, had total harmony. These souls didn't do any sins, per se. Didn't do any sins. But as he said on the first page, it's almost impossible to do mitzvahs without some kind of different angle of looking at it. So they didn't do any overt sins. They did every mitzvah in the book. They didn't do any sins. But these extra factors of the mixing in, subconscious, it's not 100% effort, so to speak, that they couldn't get out of. They didn't do any sins. Perfect clean record on the sphere of did I do, did I not do that. But in terms of totally clean of any taints of negativity, that they couldn't get out of. So in general, even if you couldn't not sin, you still will lack some degree of clarity in terms of how you do the mitzvah, how you avoid sin. Only Eliyahu and Chanoch were so perfect that they totally avoid any kind of mixtures. The Yimashecha Inyan, and this will continue at Eis Keitz Hayomin. It's going to happen until the end of days. At the end of days, what will happen? Bila Hamoves Lo Netzach. Death will be swallowed up forever. So that's one thing. Death will stop. The Gamot Yisron, and there's another thing that will happen. She's Ba'er Oz Hara Min Ha'olam Mimitziuso. The evil will be totally eradicated from existence. Kimo Shekosev, as it says in Zechariah, Ves Ruach Hatuma Avir Min Ha'oretz. And the spirit of impurity I will remove from the earth. So in other words, it will come out, there's a parallel. When man's death ceases to exist, this idea of death, so the tumah, this impurity, will leave the world. So again, it's the parallel between man and his world. That's the idea he's always saying over here. All right? And now, and it will come out, at that point in time, man will be even on a better level than first man at that point in time. Because first man, when he exists, there was evil in the world, but it stood outside of him. At this point in time, there will be no evil at all. All right? And, okay, we're talking about different levels of the Messianic era. There are different levels in the Messianic era. There's different opinions here, and if you've heard differently, it's good and well and possible. But a lot of the opinions say the first era of the Messianic times will be where we'll come back to pre-sin times, where those that are there or those will be resurrected will be able, there will be evil in the world, but the clarity will be such as man had first. But God assures us we won't make that same mistake. We won't make that same mistake. God assures us we won't make that same mistake. How can he assure us? Either those that are resurrected, not everyone's going to be resurrected right away. Those that will be resurrected are the ones that God knows will not make the mistakes that Adam made. Okay? But eventually, as latter times of this Mashiach will happen, or post-Mashiach, seventh millennia, so to speak, what's going to happen is the evil will be totally eradicated. It won't be there anymore. And it's interesting, below in 53, he brings down from the Ramban, where the Ramban says, the choice to do good will be a totally instinctive thing, because there'll be no evil at all. And he says like this, a rabbi say, I think it's on one of the verses either from Psalms or from King Solomon, I don't remember. It says, V'igiu shanim, there will be years where people will say, I have no desire in them. So some people interpret that verse meaning, you're going to be so old you won't want to live. You know, it gets a point, you're 95, you know, you every motion is a pain. There comes a time you don't even want to live. The rabbis learn it, that's referring to the times of the Mashiach. Why wouldn't a person want to live, so to speak, of the Mashiach? Meaning to say, there's no merits or demerits. Because at that time, there'll be no desire. In other words, those people who like to be spiritually challenged, there'll be no challenge when the Mashiach comes. It's going to be, as we call, spiritual compensation. I mean, just on the spiritual breadlines. It's just total spirituality. In other words, before I could work and make my Olam Haba, now it's just instinctively it's going to be good. And for those who like spiritual challenges, there's not going to be much there. All right, but there'll be a lot of clarity over there, but the challenge won't be there. So that's what he's saying. Eventually, it will be totally eradicated. All right, so he's just giving you a nice little overview of what to look forward to somewhere down the line. All right, so that was his aside, which took us about a class and a half. And now we'll come back to the main text. Okay? Fine? Everyone's okay with all this? Problems? It's okay? So
don't ask.
I'm sorry? At that point, at the latter stages, even I call it post-messianic era. Okay, there's five stages that are going to happen according to Luzzatto, and each one much more difficult than the other. You know, these things like make us crazy. You don't think about it too much because you like the way you are right now, right? Mm-hmm. I like being a body. I like having fun. I like watching ball games. What's going to happen when Mashiach comes, right? There's going to be different levels of Mashiach's time. The first levels of Mashiach's time is going to be pretty much the same the way we have it now. Although the Yetzer Hara will be more of an external, like Adam HaRishon time. Alright? But then it's going to be the next level stage where we're going to go beyond that as well. And then further stages till eventually we phase out of our humanity and totally become spiritual beings. And Lutzada goes through the five levels of how that phasing out happens. If we learn Das Tvunas 1 year, we'll learn that. Okay?
Does everybody have to die?
No.
Resurrected?
Okay, technically not. There could be some who, during the Mashiach's time, if they were alive when Mashiach comes, technically not. But eventually, everyone will lose their physicality. That's an eventuality that's got to happen.
Then we won't need the world the way it is now.
It will not be the way it is now. Eventually, you're talking thousands of years down the line. These are things we just don't have a real concept of what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you will return to exactly what you are, God. You'll go right back to that, and there'll be no physicality at all. So that's the ultimate eternity. Okay, let us go ahead back to the main text. Okay, now we come into the next point. So we got this idea now that man is a mini universe. Okay, and a little bit of all the universe is in him, and the structure of that whole celestial spheres is patterned like a human being. And the human being is the microcosm of that universe. So now the question is, so where do mitzvos fit into the picture? Where do mitzvos come in? So we got these spiritual energies, and we got man who has a microcosm of those spiritual energies. So now where do the mitzvos come in over here? Well, this is a little bit tricky over here. V'chein ha-mitzvos kulam, and yes, all the mitzvos, Kshurim utluyim, they are bound and suspended, b'mekor sharashim, upon their own roots, sharashim ha'elyon, their higher roots, b'sidre pirkei ha-merkava, within this merkava, which are the roots of all existence, which we explained, right, the various worlds and the roots of existence, right, v'shir, and they trace themselves back into those roots of existence, the sheer koma shall almost cool them, and all the structures of all the worlds. Meaning to say, mitzvahs also, you can take a mitzvah, kibud av va'em, honoring parents, whatever the mitzvahs are, the way we understand them in this world, they can be traced to their spiritual roots and be tied into this order of the merkava, of these roots of existence. And the whole span of the setup of the universe, they can be tied up into it. And the 613 mitzvahs tie into all the major parts of the universe, the higher spheres of existence as well. Shekol mitzvah pratis, every specific mitzvah, bishrusha, in its root, kolelas ribe rivavon kochos v'oros misidri hashir koma. It includes and encompasses.
There are some who, through their actions, cut themselves off from the collective Jewish people. You can, and simple scenarios, you intermarry out, to a non-Jewish woman, your children are non-Jewish. That's it. You cut yourself off. That's it. The game's over. Although, to the final day, you can do tshuva, but effectively, you've cut yourself out. Okay, and you've chosen to opt out of the collective. Okay, so now, but if other Jews are obligated to try to do what they can to bring you back in. If they try to do everything that they can, you still don't want to come back in, it's nobody's fault. You're not held accountable for it, and that person loses out of being part of the collective. And then other things have to happen to make up for that person. Other children have to be born to other people to make up that. That person, every Jew is given a specific role to fill. And that's why the quote-unquote average Jew, I don't know what word to use, not the highfalutin, high-profile, big mitzvah doer. There's a very regular, simple Jew who does what he does. Pashut Yid, he davens three times a day without fanfare and learns 2 hours a night. No, a regular, simple Jew has his mission, has his or her mission that nobody else can accomplish, and the simple reason is so, because God wouldn't create two people. God doesn't duplicate. He doesn't say, I'm going to have two people come to this world, between the two of them, the one job will get done. No, he only would need to create one person to get that job done. The fact that you exist as a Jew means you have a job to do, part of this, as part of this collective that nobody else can accomplish.
Except for men and white.
I'm sorry.
Well, they
complement each other.
Well, they use.
They each have their own role within the collective unit of one. The man himself or the woman herself will not get her job done without the other spouse. Then together they work as a collective one and get the job done by both contributing to it. Okay, so there's no one here who isn't necessary and vital, and we have to come on to everybody else.
Are there 600,000?
It's broken down even into more. You could say principal missions. Again, we believe there's a concept of 600,000 collective Jewish root souls. The root souls that sign it. There's branches off of the roots. All right? And that's where people fulfill their soulmates with people. They identify with certain people because you're coming off of the same branch. Okay? But you could say there's 600,000 general missions, but they break down, just like in the mitzvahs, they break down into specifics of that overall mission that they have to do. So it's interesting, there's a book called the Sefer HaCharedim, which I thought I had possession of, and I haven't had time to look for it, that breaks down the mitzvahs according to every part of the body. A mystical work. I know that's what you want to read, right? And Angelo's still trying to tell me what I did wrong on Thursday night, he claims, why my back is hurting me. Whatever. If you went to people who were very mystically connected, when Jewish people had prophets, when you were sick, you didn't go to the doctor. Doctors made no money thousands of years ago. You went to the prophet. The prophet felt your pulse or touched your forehead or just looked at you, and the Aver was...